fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. I'm Glenn Moberg, and today on Route 51, we welcome back into our Wausau studios Congressman Dave Obey, a Democrat who has represented North Central Wisconsin for more than 40 years and who, as chair of the House Appropriations Committee, has taken a lead role in writing the Obama administration's stimulus package and the House version of the new budget bill. Mr. Obey is here for the next hour to discuss that legislation and to respond to some of the criticism the measures have received from a Republican Party which has stood lockstep in opposition, arguing that the bill spent too much money and that the increase in the national debt will unduly burden future generations. We live in tough economic times, the worst economy since the Great Depression, and some would say that parallels exist between the runaway, unregulated capitalism that existed before the economic crisis of the 30s and that existed before our current crisis. This is a rare opportunity for you to weigh in with your thoughts and concerns on the economy, and it is your chance to talk directly to one of the most influential political figures in Washington. We will be taking your phone calls on the air for the next hour at 261-6371. That's 261-6371. Or if you're outside the Wausau area, you can call us toll-free at 1-800-780-9742. Dave Obey, thank you for making your time available to us today, and congratulations on 40 years representing North Central Wisconsin.
Thank you, and I'm glad to be here.
We understand that the President of the United States dropped by your anniversary party earlier this month.
Yes, he did. It was kind of a surprise. We had no idea he was coming until really the day that he showed up. It was very nice of him.
Before we get going, and we do have a full line of phone banks right now, and I want to get to as many as those as we can during the next hour, we had a number of tea parties around the United States yesterday in hundreds of cities, and there was one in downtown Wausau. I was there with my tape recorder, and I'm going to play some of the comments that we recorded yesterday evening, so that you can get your reaction to them.
Are you tired of politicians who want government to control your health care?
Yes!
Are you tired of politicians who want to take your wealth and redistribute it to others?
Yes!
Are you tired of politicians who seek to change America from a capitalist to a socialist nation?
Yes!
Well, all the spending is unconstitutional, totally inappropriate. As far as taxes, we have to get rid of the income tax completely.
I'm tired of what the government's doing, and it's time to take things back and have the people run this nation the way it should be.
According to the latest Gallup poll, 71% of the American people support President Barack Obama and the way he's handling the economy. How does it feel to be in a minority here today?
It feels wonderful, because 70% or whatever the percent is of those people want something for nothing. And when they find out it isn't going to be for nothing, they're going to change their minds.
I guess it feels great to be in the minority if the minority's right.
And why do you think you're right? According to traditional economic theory, when the economy is deflating, and that's what's happening right now, you have to inflate it by pumping more money into it, even if it means deficit spending.
In the last 40 years, that economic theory is what got us into this mess. My daddy taught me, you don't spend what you don't have.
I want to protest the tax and spending of our government.
Taxes right now are lower under President Obama than they were under George W. Bush just a few months ago. He just passed a middle income tax.
If you've taken a good look at a stimulus bill, they won't be. His budget, they won't be lower.
Taxes are out of control. The government is no longer listening to the people. All they want to do is spend. They don't ask the people whether it's okay to spend it or not.
How do you react to the fact that 71% of the American people right now say they support President Obama and his economic plan, including the stimulus package and the budget bill that Dave Obey helped write?
I think they're going to wake up. We haven't seen the bottom yet. And when they see the bottom, they're not going to like what they see.
Congressman Dave Obey, when they see the bottom, they're not going to like what they see. Your reaction to the comments we recorded at the Tea Party yesterday evening in downtown Wausau?
Well, God bless America. I mean, people in the greatest democracy in the world have a right to spout off anytime they want, even if they're wrong. I understand how average people on Main Street can be concerned about everything that's happening. But very frankly, Well, I'm sure that some of the people who attended that rally were legitimately interested in trying to affect what's going on. As a practical matter, we know that those rallies were organized nationally by Republican operatives. And I guess I would really ask, how do you take people seriously when they say things like Barack Obama should be compared to the Antichrist, or when they say that we are spreading the wealth since 1917 like Stalin, Lenin, Kim Jong-il, and Obama?
Those were comments that were made at the rally in Madison,
yes.
not the one in Wausau.
No, but the comments are roughly the same regardless of what city they've been held in.
So contention that these were Republican events, they were top-down events, not grassroots events?
There's no question that Richard Armey, who was the Republican floor leader when Newt Gingrich was Speaker, that he was one of the originators of this effort nationally. Now, I'm sure that there are people who showed up at the rally who had nothing to do with the national Republican leadership. But this was a hit job organized by national Republicans to try to put the squeeze on Obama and to shake public confidence in what he's trying to do. And that people have a right to do that, but we also have a right to call them on it for what it is.
Your reaction to the fact that the Tea Parties were also heavily promoted in advance by local conservative talk radio stations and by Fox News, which actually had not just its commentators, but some of its news anchors serving as masters of ceremony for the bigger events.
I think the problem that we have is that today we have the most serious problems that have confronted this country since World War II. And economically, the most serious problem facing this country since the early 30s. And what we need is some serious cooperation between people of varying philosophies in order to deal with those problems. We cannot allow this crisis to degenerate into a series of gotcha efforts, into a series of trying to score political points at the expense of being able to figure out how we get out of this mess. I would point out that Barack Obama inherited this mess. Attacking Barack Obama for what he's trying to do is, it's sort of like the people who capsized the national economy now squawking because the rescue crew is there and they're still wet. The fact is Obama's been in 12 weeks. He didn't start this attack on the recession. President Bush did when he asked the Congress to provide $750 billion to help stabilize the financial situation. And I think it's fair to say President Bush did succeed in trying to avoid the worst aspects of the credit freeze, although obviously many people, including myself, don't like the fact that he and Secretary Paulson had almost no standards for the delivery of that money to the banks.
The common refrain, and we heard it from the podium in Wausau yesterday, that President Obama is trying to impose socialism on America. Are there legitimate reasons for that concern, or has the Republican Party simply resurrected the ghost of Joe McCarthy?
I don't care what labels people put on things. The question is, is the policy that's being followed one that is likely to work? We have a very serious problem. In fact, we have three of them. The first problem is that internationally, in September, when President Bush was still president, the world's credit markets seized up and threatened to cause a worldwide economic catastrophe. Secondly, that was accompanied at the same time by the housing problem, with the collapse of housing values, a 20% drop in housing values in 1 year. And thirdly, we had a huge collapse of demand in the economy. And we are now told by reputable economists that we face a $3 to $3.5 trillion hole in the economy. And when private spending in the economy collapses, almost everybody understands that if you don't counter that by an injection on a temporary basis of investments on the government side, that the economy will go into a death spiral. We've had 5 million people lose their jobs And we're being told that if we don't do something dramatic, there are going to be another 5 million people losing their jobs. If people don't like the size of the deficit now, how big do they think it's going to be when 5 million more people are out of work? That turns people from taxpayers into tax eaters. They don't pay income taxes because they lose their jobs. They do collect welfare. They do collect food stamps. They do collect Medicaid. They do collect other government services, and that blows a hole of the size of a tank in the side of the federal budget.
We heard one of the people at the rally yesterday. It was the man who ran against you on the Republican ticket last year, Dan Mielke, who said this problem was caused by deficit spending. It can't be solved by deficit spending.
Well, all I can say about that is during our debate during the election, he made some of the same comments, and I said, you know, that's what Herbert Hoover said. You don't look like Herbert Hoover, but you sound a lot like him. And he says, ah, yes, and he was a great man. Well, I think Herbert Hoover was a fine man individually, but I think we've learned a long time ago that Hoover economics did nothing to pull the country out of the Depression, and you had to have an activist government run by FDR to turn around Hoover's do-nothing attitude. For people who question what Obama is doing is, what's your alternative? And they don't like some of the aspects of this package. But if you're sick, if you've got a serious disease, you don't ask the doctor, am I going to like the taste of the medicine? You ask the doctor, hey, is this going to work? Am I going to be better? That's the crucial question.
There seems to be some historical revisionism going on. Some conservatives claiming that Franklin Roosevelt's New Deal did not fix the Depression, but either caused it or made it worse. Now, that's hard to believe when the people who lived through the Depression, our parents and grandparents, voted to elect Roosevelt 4 consecutive times, more than any other president in history. But if he made the Depression worse, A, was the greatest generation that stupid?
Well, I think FDR saved capitalism from the excesses of the economic elite in the 30s. But let me say there is one aspect of their criticism of FDR which is correct. Basically, what happened with FDR is that when he took the presidency, we had about 25% unemployment. He primed the pump with government money. And he brought that down to about 15% by 1937. He then thought the economy was on its way, and so he cut way back on his stimulus package. And when he did that, the economy went into another nosedive in 38. And so the economy didn't start to recover again until Roosevelt resumed his stimulus package in 1939. And then World War II came along and finished the job. So I think we can learn a very basic lesson from FDR, which is that you don't cut back on government activity in the midst of a huge recession. You've got to jolt the economy into moving forward. And then when the economy starts to recover, then you can cut back on government spending and repay some of that money to the Treasury.
Dave, are you claiming that the economic stimulus package, this $1 trillion or whatever it is that we're going into debt, that's not enough?
Let me put it this way. I have no doubt that when the discussion of the stimulus package started, that people were talking about, in the administration, the economic team, I think they were talking about a $1 trillion stimulus package. That wound up being cut back to under $800 billion, and that happened largely because we had to do that in order to get the 3 Republican votes in the Senate.
Right,
that
but
were
people
key.
Are adding to that the TARP funds, the bailout, the budget bill that's before both houses of Congress.
I understand, but you have to take it one step at a time in sequence. The fact is that in terms of stimulus, in the end, we had to cut about $200 billion out of that in order to get the Republican votes necessary in the Senate to pass it. I disagreed with that reduction, but that's democracy. You often have to make compromises.
Are you saying that might not be enough?
I think very clearly it might not be enough. I mean, unemployment is – we've already seen unemployment go to 8.5%. We have been told by reputable economists that if we did nothing, unemployment would go to 12% or higher. And what we're trying to do is to do enough with that stimulus package to shave several points off that unemployment rate. We'd like to hold it, if we could, under 10. I don't know if we're going to make it or not.
Well, the figure is 9.4% in Wisconsin as of figures released today. I want to go to the telephones, 2616371 or 1-800-780-9742. Alan Marshfield, you've been very patient. You are on the air with Congressman Dave Obey.
Hello, Glenn and Dave. I want to focus on veterans' issues in reality. I will make three very brief comments, and I have one question. Last year, or this year, the 2009 VA budget was passed fully funded and on time for the first time in anyone's memory, and it was due mainly to the legislative skills of Congressman Obey, who, as appropriation chairman, made veterans' health care a priority and also crafted the legislation in such a manner that it was signed by the president on September 30th, 2008, and for that he should be praised. Second comment, the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. Unbeknownst to me, until I got to Washington, was there was $1.4 billion in funding for VA programs. And in Wisconsin, that translated to 25 million roughly, of which approximately 6 million was spent at the VA medical centers in Madison, Tolmar, and Milwaukee. Another 6 was spent on the Veterans Home at King and Union Grove, and the final million was spent at Wood National Cemetery.
And your third point, Al, we're running short on time.
Okay, the third point is that when I go to Washington, I've gone the last couple of years talking about veterans' issues with the staff of Wisconsin legislators, and I want to compliment Congressman Obey for having a very knowledgeable and professional staff. They've actually educated me into the ways of Washington, and I appreciate all those efforts. The only question I had is, the budget resolution has been passed by Congress. I'm just curious as to what the status is and what should we expect.
All right, Al, thanks so much for the phone call. We're going to take a very quick break here, and then Dave will be back to answer your questions. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include attorney Paul A. Sturgill, serving the legal needs of the elderly and their families throughout Wisconsin and Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Toll-free information is at 888-613-0600.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from UMR, providing Employee Benefits Administration, Integrated Health Management, and Pharmacy Benefits Administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
Congressman Dave Obey is with us today in our Route 51 studios, and Dave, first of all, we are being informal here because you've told me in the past that you prefer to be called Dave as opposed to Mr. Obey or Congressman. It is not a sign of disrespect on my part.
It's better than a lot of people call me.
Your response to Al's concern about veterans' issues?
Well, first of all, I appreciate his comments about what I did last year with respect to the new GI Bill for veterans. My proudest achievement in the last session of Congress was working with Senator Jim Webb of Virginia in order to provide the greatest expansion of education benefits for GIs since World War II. There's another case where we put money into a program over the short haul and get much more benefit back over the long haul. It's been estimated with the original GI Bill, for instance, that we have received benefits that are about 14 times as great as the cost of that bill eventually was because of the added talents that those veterans were able to garner because of their education. With respect to the budget this year, the House and the Senate Budget Committee are working now on the differences between the two packages, and with respect to veterans, what I hope will come out of that is an understanding that we will appropriate the veterans' budget on an advanced funding basis so that people will know from year to year with certainty what's around the corner for them in terms of veterans health care.
Al, thanks so much for the phone call. Let's go to Jeff in Stevens Point. Jeff, you're on Route 51 with Congressman Dave Obey. Hello, Jeff.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. Dave, you had mentioned earlier when people have problems with the financial bailouts that you'd like them to provide alternative solutions. And so to that end, I just want to mention that there's a financial professional and also a former economist from the University of Michigan named John Hussman, that's H-U-S-S-M-A-N, and he writes a weekly commentary that talks about some alternatives to what we've been doing in terms of the TARP funds and the bailouts that would involve much less taxpayer money, and his way of thinking would be much more effective. And I just want to touch on one thing with that, and maybe you can talk to this. It's his feeling in mind, too, that one of the biggest problems that we have is going to be the foreclosures, and we've had the subprime foreclosures, and a lot of people believe, as I do, that the next thing is going to be the Alt-A and the adjustable rate mortgage problem. And John Hussman has an idea of having the government facilitate some of this foreclosure mitigation, but rather than guaranteeing taxpayer guarantees, that the people who have the mitigation would then give up property appreciation rights for that, and it would kind of be a win-win situation in the long run for everybody. So I was wondering if maybe you could address that, and then also looking forward 5-10 years down the road in terms of the financial situation, what changes do you think we need to make in the long run to get us out of this mess?
Thanks, Jeff. A long question. You've only got a couple of minutes here, Dave.
Well, let me simply say that I don't consider myself to be an expert with respect to the housing market. What Professor Hussman is talking about may very well be a viable alternative. My mind is open on that front to any suggestion that can help get us out of this mess. I think we are somewhat limited in the options available to the Congress because President Bush started down one road, President Obama started down a second road, and at some point you have to follow through on the policies that you're undertaking and stop zigzagging. And I don't know whether or not the administration will consider an adjustment in their policy to be in order. I do know that when the Congress reconvenes, there will be a number of actions that the Banking Committee is bringing out on the floor. And certainly among them, I would hope, would be greatly strengthened regulation of the financial markets. I think we had a very basic mistake made when the Congress refused to oversee derivatives. I think we had another basic mistake made when Glass-Steagall was repealed. There was a reason that we had Glass-Steagall in the first place, and
Dave,
we're discovering now what it was.
We've got to take a quick break for news. You're listening to Route 51. I'm Glenn Moberg, Congressman Dave Obey, our guest, 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. If you want to join the conversation, we'll be back after this.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from the Ask Away Wisconsin Virtual Reference Consortium, an online service staffed by librarians 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Answers to questions online at www.askaway.info.
You are listening to Route 51 Regional Talk Radio for North Central Wisconsin on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Glenn Moberg. Our special guest this afternoon, Congressman Dave Obey, taking your phone calls at 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. We've got a full phone bank, and let's go right to them. Ned in Wausau, you have been very patient. Ned, you're on Route 51.
Yes, thank you very much. I'd like to thank Dave for his role in the stimulus bill, and we absolutely had to have that bill and major action to stem the unemployment crisis that we are in. And if we took the Herbert Hoover approach of let the free market take care of the problem, I think we'd be in possibly moving from a recession into a depression. So I am very thankful for Dave's role in that. My main question is to see if Dave would be interested in supporting H.R. 1826, which is sponsored by John Larson, and it's called the Fair Elections Now Act, and it has to do with campaign finance reform. And the reason I bring that up now is because there are so many issues that we'd like to address, such as health care reform, environmental issues, and so on. And with all the special interests and lobbyists in Washington, we need to have a Congress that's not beholden to all these lobbyists. So John Larson, he's from Connecticut's 1st District, introduced the bill, and I just wanted to see if Dave would be willing to support it.
Thanks, Ned.
Well, John's a fine man, a fine legislator. I don't know what his bill does. I have my own campaign finance reform bill. I have a long history of supporting campaign finance legislation in the House. And basically, it's my view that if we really want a government that's responsive to regular people, that we would eliminate the role of private money in general election campaigns. And so what I have is a proposal which would set up a grassroots democracy fund, and it would allow the Federal Elections Commission to advertise about the existence of that fund and let people know that if they want to take back their government, that they can contribute voluntarily to that fund, and then the money in that fund would be divided between the various congressional districts. And in that way, and then you would have no private money allowed in general elections, only the funds which are raised through the public venue.
How do you react to people who say that when you keep them from spending money on elections, you're interfering with their First Amendment rights to free speech?
I think that you do not have a First Amendment right to deceive someone on a public policy issue such as an election. To me, freedom of speech means everybody ought to be able to speak. It doesn't mean that their wallets ought to be able to substitute for civil speech. You have a choice. You can either continue the existing system of privately financed campaigns, and if you do that, you will always have the most well-off people in society dominating those elections, or else you can go to a system of public financing and put everybody on an even keel. And I would point out that the legislation that I support would result in challengers having a much more significant share of campaign funds than they do right now, and I think that that would help balance out the system as well.
Congressman Dave Obey on Route 51, 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. Ned, thanks for your phone call. Let's go to Jim in Rothschild. Jim, you're on Route 51.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My concern is about the government following U.S. laws. Israel's failure to sign the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty means that it does not qualify for U.S. aid by law. And there's a couple of laws here that I'm sure Congressman Obey is probably familiar with. The other one is the Arms Export Control Act requires that military items transferred to foreign governments by the United States be used solely for internal security and legitimate self-defense. Since Israeli attacks against civilian infrastructure and population centers clearly go beyond legitimate self-defense, the United States is legally obliged to suspend arms transfers to Israel. And I'm hoping that Representative Obey shares my concerns and wonders what he can do to make sure that our government obeys our laws.
Jim, thanks for the phone call.
Well, thank you. I think the most important thing our government can do right now is to try to prevent the Israelis and the Palestinians from going at each other big time, as they have a huge potential to do, because of the election of Mr. Netanyahu on the Israeli side and because of the total unraveling of the moderate portion of the Palestinian movement. What I think you will see Obama do is to try to put that issue ahead of any other consideration. With respect to whether or not he should suspend aid to Israel because of some of their behavior, I think you have the same problem with respect to Pakistan. I mean, Pakistan, the president is asking for a significant amount of aid for Pakistan, and yet Pakistan is the number one violator of the Arms Control Act with respect to nuclear weapons. I mean, you, in the person of Mr. Khan, you have a person who has done more to ruin our ability to limit possession of nuclear weapons than anyone else in the world. And yet, for a variety of reasons, we're being asked both by the Bush administration and the Obama administration to support aid to the Pakistan government. I think that that raises very serious considerations and very serious concerns about whether or not we're relying on a country that's unreliable.
Dave Obey is our guest on Route 51. Our phone number is 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. Let's go back to the phones. Lori in Neillsville also has a foreign policy question. Lori, you're on Route 51.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just had a question, something that's come to my mind as I've listened through, you know, some of the public radio shows and about the economic crisis. And one of the things I've wondered is why, to me, when we spent so much on the Iraq war, and you had all that money going out, and then when you had the crunch of the mortgage crisis and the other problems we had, I just think that by spending so much on the war that we pretty much set ourselves up for where we are today. And I'm just wondering if what David Obey's thoughts are on that.
All right. Thank you, Lori.
Well, I opposed President Bush's decision to go into Iraq in the first place, and I was the first member of Congress to call for the resignation of Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld because of their conduct of the war. And I think that our entry into the Iraqi war was the worst foreign policy mistake that we've made in my lifetime. It has eroded our influence across the entire Muslim world, and it has caused us to be mired in a number of other problems, such as Pakistan and Afghanistan. I tried, along with two other members of the House, I tried to say to the House and to the President, look, I'm against this war, but at least if we're going to fight it, let's pay for it rather than shoveling the cost onto our grandkids. And I think if we had done that, we would have been in a much more secure financial situation. And the chaos that we're facing now in our economic situation might have been mitigated to some extent.
I'm Glenn Moberg. You're listening to Congressman Dave Obey on a special edition of Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network. We'll be back with your phone calls after this.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from UMR, providing Employee Benefits Administration, Integrated Health Management, and Pharmacy Benefits Administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include attorney Paul A. Sturgill, serving the legal needs of the elderly and their families throughout Wisconsin and Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Toll-free information is at 888-613-0600.
You're listening to Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network. I'm Glenn Moberg. Our guest today, Congressman Dave Obey, taking your phone calls. We do have a full phone bank, but we're going to try to get to as many calls in the next 15 minutes as possible. Those numbers again, 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. Let's go to Ed in Wausau. Ed, you have a question about earmarks, according to my computer. You're on Route 51.
Right, and there's been a lot of talk about the bridge to nowhere and things like that and whatever. But I think a couple of the earmarks that Dave has been responsible for, I think one of them is the completion of Highway 29. I've lived here for about 35 years, and the other one was we used to have a school of nursing in Wausau that was discontinued when Wausau Hospital moved to a new facility, and there's a new building with Dave's name on it. It's It's a nursing school.
At North Central Technical College?
Exactly. And by having that earmark, it has taken on a bad name. It used to be called log rolling back when I had political science. Dave's projects really helped the community. In the case of that nursing school, they provide nursing care. Wausau Hospitals was hiring nurses from Canada and whatever before that school started. And I'd just like to thank Dave.
So, Ed, you're saying that earmarks aren't all bad, in your opinion?
No, they were turned bad, I think, when, you know, but throughout in political science, you can go back, and that's been an institution in Congress that's been in existence for a couple hundred years or something like that. But in Dave's case, where Highway 29 is great for getting to the Twin Cities, and I think it helps us.
Ed, thanks so much for the phone call. Not really a question there, but Mr. Obey, you have been criticized for your pork barrel spending, for your earmarks, for being one of the biggest offenders in Congress. Your reaction?
Well, I think people need to understand what an earmark is. An earmark is simply a decision by the Congress to spend a specific amount of money for a specific project rather than having the executive agency make that same decision. When I became chairman of the committee again, the first thing I did about earmarks was to suspend all of them for a year until we could reform the process. After we did that, then we resumed the process at a much lower rate. If you take a look at the earmarks that I am asking for next year, for instance, and they are all posted on my website, what you will see is that the lion's share of them is simply they represent after-school programs, which we're trying to continue in this district, or a sewer and water projects for communities who can't afford to do those activities by themselves. There are good earmarks and bad earmarks, just like there's good legislation and bad legislation, just like there's good politicians and bad politicians. And I think what people need to do is simply take a look. I mean, virtually every dollar that was spent in this county the last 4 or 5 years on highway modernization came through congressional earmarks. So
now you were criticized at the Tea Party event last night for your earmarks for repairing the lighthouses, $5 million on the Apostle Islands, also for work that's been earmarked for the Shawamigan Nicolet Forest, $2 million, and over $1 million for the Ice Age Trail.
I plead fully guilty of being in support of expanding the Ice Age Trail. That is a marvelous, low-cost recreational opportunity for American families. You can get your kids out into the woods, see some beautiful scenery, and you don't have to spend a lot of money. We just saved the Carnegie Library in Medford with the Save American Treasures grant. And what was the other one that you mentioned?
$2 million for the Shawamigan Nicolet Forest.
Yeah, well, that's the Ice Age. That's the Ice Age project. But the other one
was another million?
The Apostle Lighthouses.
Right.
And I would ask, we have 6 historic lighthouses in the Apostle Islands. The Apostle Island Park did not have enough money in his budget to preserve more than one or two of them. I'd like to know what's wrong with saving those historic landmarks at the same time that their preservation provides good jobs at a time when people badly need construction jobs all around the country. I make no apology for trying to bring money back to my district. I thought that was one of the jobs that we were supposed to do.
261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. If you want to speak to Congressman Dave Obey, let's go to John in Park Falls. John, you're on Route 51.
Hi, Glenn. Hi, Dave.
Is this John Smart? Okay.
It is indeed.
Well,
Dave,
hi,
I want
John.
To,
how are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I want to thank you for the earmarks that we're living with in Park Falls. You helped provide a grant for our school that is still in use today that's supposed to bring the community into the school. We have a program called Monday Night Open Schoolhouse, and we have the school open for the community members to come in, and it's been a very, very successful enterprise. Also in Park Falls, we've got a wonderful fire truck with the high ladders, and we're the only high ladder truck within a significant radius of Park Falls, and that fire truck gets used a lot. And so thank you. Thank you for the earmarks. I also want to bring up the idea, and Dave, you've heard me on this subject before. I'm a Peace Corps volunteer veteran, and I would like to see some money put to expanding on national service. The president has talked about it, and Dave, thank you for co-sponsoring the bill to expand the size of the Peace Corps. I see that there's a bill that's expanding the size of AmeriCorps also and Teach for America.
Michelle Bachman says those are mandatory socialist re-education camps for our youth.
Michelle Bachman says a lot of things that are easily ignored. But anyway, I think that considering the state of the economy and the fact that people are finding it difficult to find jobs, I think national service is a natural. I know for a fact that the applications to the Peace Corps and AmeriCorps have been going up significantly because there are young people getting out of college who can't find any other kind of work, and this is a great thing for them to do. You might look at it as a modern version of the CCCs, which really made a lot of northern Wisconsin. But I really
want to
thank
you. That's a Civilian Conservation Corps. John, we have to move on. I want to get to some more phone calls. But
right.
Dave, if you can respond to the concept of more resources going toward national service.
Well, the president is proposing that we triple the size of AmeriCorps, and I think to the extent we can do that, that would be terrific. I'd like to know what is wrong at a time when young people are entering the worst job market in two generations. What is wrong if they don't have good job prospects in the private sector? What's wrong with encouraging them to put in some public service time, doing things that communities need doing, helping people less fortunate than themselves? To me, that's part of what America is all about.
And let's go to Jim in Ironwood. Those phone numbers again, 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. We do have a line that's cleared now. If you want to get in, one more question for Dave Obey. We go to Jim in Ironwood. Jim, you're on Route 51.
Thank you very much. I'm the president of a small community college in the western Upper Peninsula of Michigan, actually Congressman Stupak's district. 20% of our students come from Wisconsin, primarily Congressman Obey's area, and I wanted to thank the congressman for his leadership in greatly expanding the Pell Grant program. For the students we serve in both Michigan and Wisconsin, the broad Pell Grant will greatly increase opportunities for folks to obtain a higher education, and I just want to commend the congressman for his great work in that behalf. And also just a note that I've had the opportunity to read his autobiography, and I wish more people would espouse the values that the congressman indicates in his book. Well done, and thank you very much, Congressman.
All right. Thank you, Jim.
Well, thank you. And let me say I am proud of the fact that we put $16 billion into the stimulus package for expansion of Pell Grants for people trying to go to college. I mean, what's happening with families losing jobs, it becomes more and more difficult to keep their kids in college. And if kids have to drop out of college, that represents a tremendous disinvestment in the future, which the country can't afford. And so that's why we expanded the maximum Pell Grant by almost a little over $600.
We also
expanded work study.
We have time for just one more phone call. Let's go to Bob in Rhinelander. Bob, you're on Route 51.
Oh, thank you very much for taking my call.
Speak up, Bob. We've got a bad connection.
Okay. I was wondering why some of these large banks turned down the government stimulus money.
You'll have to ask them. I personally am not going to cry when banks turn down government money. I can think of a lot of other places I'd rather put it.
All right, short and sweet. And so we've got time for yet one more question. Let's go to Jerry in Wausau. Jerry, you are the last caller on Route 51 this afternoon.
Congressman Obey, I heard you say one time that the initial bailout bill last fall that was presented to Congress from the White House was some three pages or something like that, and that Congress put in quite a few safeguards that you did quite a bit of more work to make certain that it just wasn't quite the blank check that the White House was giving. Could you give me those numbers on how the pages
Well, the president's original request was 3.5 pages. It said, give me the authority to spend $750 billion any way I want in this crisis. I don't remember how many pages the final bill was. The Congress added, at least 30 or 40 pages of limitations. The problem is they were doing it on an emergency basis, and they still left the president with a lot of leeway. And some of the money he used well, and some of the money he didn't. I'm happy that at least the worst aspects of that credit freeze were delayed by what George Bush did. I've had a lot of disagreements with President Bush through the years, and as I said earlier, I don't like the way that that he used a lot of that money. But at least he recognized that we had a worldwide emergency on our hands. And he acted, even though I didn't totally agree with the way he acted, at least he started the ball rolling, and that's important.
Jerry, thanks for the phone call. Dave, we'll be talking about priorities in the budget. There's been money set aside for health care reform, universal health care. Are we going to see any action on that this year?
We just have to. I mean, we are not going to ever balance the budget if we don't get a handle on health care costs. And I don't think we can continue to afford the moral abomination of having 40 million people in this society without access to quality health care.
Also, high-speed rail, $12 billion has been earmarked for it. We have about $100 billion worth of projects that governors in various states want to see go forward. Why such a paltry sum for high-speed rail?
Well, as a practical matter, it's a huge sum in comparison to what's been spent before. The previous budgets were less than $1 billion. So the president's request was an eightfold increase in what the country had been spending.
But it won't even build one system.
No, but I mean, you cannot just throw a lot of money immediately at a program. You have to gear it up. And we're hoping that Wisconsin, Illinois, and Minnesota will be at the front of the line in terms of moving ahead with that.
They're actually talking about linking Cleveland, Chicago, Milwaukee, Madison, and then on up to the Twin Cities. It'd be nice to get a line into Wausau, too.
It certainly would, but it's going to go to the urban centers first.
Dave Obey, thank you so much for being with us. Thanks to all of you who called in today with your questions and comments. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Kelson Quisler. Thanks, as always, to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Next week on Route 51, we celebrate Arbor Day with one of Wisconsin's top specialists on trees, not just the care and growing of them, but also their importance to Wisconsin's identity, economy, and history. Our Bruce Allison has a new children's book out called If Trees Could Talk, and we will be talking about that. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for joining us today. Until next week, we are heading out of town.